Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
You know some of the stories of some of the things that have gone on just, you know, within the last couple of years or even in the past, but enforcement is really strained right now. And so until we start enforcing some of these rules, like you said, I mean, people can just call someone's agents or someone's parents and offer them a certain amount of money, and then it goes from there. And that's just part of it. I mean, there's so many other things that come in place. So that's one of the things to me that I think we've got to get addressed in college sports and college football is enforcement, because right now there's virtually none. And it's gotten worse as time has gone on.
It's Ryan Day, Ohio State coach, talking about enforcement. Stuart Mandel of The Athletic, fresh off covering the college football playoff national championship game, joining us. Stuart, what's Ryan Day? Is he singing the refrain that everybody's singing
about no enforcement of what, the NIL rules?
Yeah.
I mean, was there ever enforcement? Sometimes when these coaches talk about it, it's like there was this magic time when there was enforcement, and then it went away. You know, I mean, the problems that college sports is facing is that these are paid employees now, but they refuse to acknowledge that. And so until you have some form of recognition that these are employees and we need to sign them into employment agreements for a certain length of time and obviously with certain protections, you're going to have this wild, wild west free agency where everybody's a free agent at any moment and there's just no real rules or regulations.
And I kind of wonder from a player perspective, given that, you know, some of the quarterbacks will take pay cuts as they go to the NFL. I wonder from a player perspective, they're staying in school longer. Doesn't seem like this generation of players is complaining. I hear the coaches complaining and others.
over the last, really just like the last 3-4 years, 5 years, we've seen such a reversal where coaches, and you think back to iconic coaches, the Woody Hayes, maybe even further back than that, that ruled with an iron fist, and the players just had to go along with it. And the power dynamic has shifted almost entirely, where the players can call their own shots now, where they want to play. If you don't play me soon enough, I'm going to go somewhere else. This other person's offering me more money, I'm going to go somewhere else. I think it's not fair to assume that's what every kid is like. I mean, there's a lot of kids who are making decisions not based on money or passing up a lot of money because they like the coaching staff better somewhere or something like that. But, you know, it's exactly how it is in the NFL. I mean, nobody criticizes those guys if they change teams because of somebody was able to offer them a better situation. And that's what college players are faced with now every day. And I do hope at some point they get, not just for the coaches' sake, for everybody's sake, some more orderly system than what we have now. Because players are being taken advantage of. They're being taken advantage of by agents who are taking way too much of their contracts and whatnot. But like I said, I mean, it's Ryan Day is not going to get that from like somebody sitting in Indianapolis who's trying to enforce rules. And by the way, every time they try to enforce a rule, somebody sues them. It's going to be a much deeper change to college sports than that.
CFP comes out today and says Vegas in 27. January 25th, 2027. What was your reaction when you saw Vegas in that date?
Vegas, I had suspected was coming. I think that's going to be great for college football. As long as they're going to keep rotating these sites, you want to have it in places like, and Atlanta was like this a little bit, where everybody congregates in one place. When they have it in Houston or Santa Clara, it's like the game's not even happening. So I think Vegas will be awesome. You know, I think this year and the TV rating showed that this 12-team playoff is going too late into the year, and I hope they'll find a way to move it back closer to the holidays. But I understand that, you know, if you're bidding out a major event like that to a city like Vegas that has God knows how many other tourist events, you have to commit to that date now, and you can't really change that on the fly.
The playoff in general, you know, I know, like, here in the state of Oregon, there was a lot of knee-jerk reaction to Oregon losing the way they did. Is there a risk here, Stuart, of overreacting to a loss and drawing sweeping conclusions? Do we need a bigger sample size, or have you seen enough of this playoff to kind of step away and go, okay, it needs changes, here's what I would do?
The only change that I think they should go ahead and make is the four conference champs getting the byes no matter what they're ranked, because that was put in at a time before realignment, and it's just not realistic to think that the ACC and Big 12 are going to often, it's not like they'll never produce champs that highly ranked, but more often than not, they won't be, and it just makes for an unfair bracket. That's really unfair position Oregon was put in for one, and really an unfair advantage Penn State got, playing a lower-seeded team. They lost the Big Ten title game, they played a lower-seeded team in the quarters than Oregon did. And I think that will continue. But anything beyond that, yeah, I would say hold on, wait and see. You know, like, I wouldn't read anything into the teams that were picked at the bottom this year, whether it should have been SMU or Alabama. Let's see who those four candidates are next year before jumping to any conclusions.
I saw you on the morning of the championship game, and you were busy doing your way too early, hey, next year's top 25. Where were your toughest questions as you start to look at next season and trying to forecast who's in the top 25?
I've been doing that for years, and it was definitely the toughest to decide who number one should be. I went with Penn State, despite having some skepticism that James Franklin can actually pull that off. But in this new era, you know, you saw what Ohio State did. They went all in on this team, a $20 million team. They got all those guys to come back, and it worked. It's unrealistic to think they're just going to reload and do it again next year. And so we may see teams like that are geared up for one season in particular, and Penn State appears to be that. They are getting all their guys to come back. Those two running backs, both of them could have turned pro. The quarterback, Drew Aller, could have turned pro. And so I put them number one over some other teams like Texas. Texas has Arch Manning, and everybody's excited about that, but they have some holes elsewhere, and pretty much everybody does. There's no super teams like there were 5 or 10 years ago.
I am looking at Oregon, and, you know, John Wilner and I have kicked this around. He thinks Oregon's window may have closed. I'm saying not so fast. They're still so talented. Look at their recruiting classes. Where do you stand on Oregon and their window to win in this era?
No window is closed, I don't think. I just think that there was a little bit more. I mean, they were just so fortunate the last couple of years to know going into the season they had a quarterback who had started multiple years in a major conference and been very successful. And you know, Dante Moore has started in a major conference, but he struggled. He was a true freshman. We'll see. You know, it's going to be a long time between those stints. But if he turns out to be pretty good, Oregon can be very good because we know the kind of talent that Dan Lanning has assembled there.
Where'd you have Oregon in your top 25?
I had them toward the bottom of the top 10. I had Ohio State outside the top 10, and I had Oregon just below them. Both of those teams will be starting younger guys, which used to be totally normal, but now it seems like every time, you know, anytime anybody has a young guy coming up at quarterback, they just go and pluck somebody from the portal.
Notre Dame, you know, I thought really in the second half of that game, they could have faded. They come back, they make it a closer game. You know, it had a little bit of unexpected intrigue at the end. It looked like it was going to be a blowout, but can Marcus Freeman get them back? I mean, they look like they're built and they've got, you know, they've got returners.
Yeah, they have. He has definitely elevated the skill talent there from what they had under Brian Kelly. I think they're in the right track. And next year they'll have Jeremiah Love back. They'll have Jane Greathouse back. They lose a lot on defense, including Al Golden, the defensive coordinator, went back to the NFL this week. But they should be very good again. And there's another team where the last 2 years they've had a one-year rental transfer quarterback. And now we'll see if one of the guys that they've brought up within their system can step in next year.
Stuart Mandel of The Athletic is our guest. Chip Kelly, obviously our listeners and readers in this region, some were happy for him, watched what he did, you know, at Ohio State. $2 million this year to call plays, plus some bonuses. He may have made $3 million, as much as $3 million, just to call plays and be happy. Do you think Chip's a head coach again, or do you see him as a forever coordinator from here?
If he were to become a head coach again, first of all, there's no predicting, right? You know, Chip, he's always going to do what you're least expecting. But, like, I could see him, like, deciding to become the head coach at New Hampshire came up, right? Like some Northeastern SDS school. But yeah, being a Power Five head coach, where you have to deal with the NIL and all the stuff we were talking about at the beginning. No, I think this was exactly what he wanted to be doing. It got him closer to his roots. He got to play, call plays, coach guys up, and yeah, I think he'd be very happy being the head coach at a small school in a part of the country that he's familiar with.
SEC and Big Ten will hold a meeting in February. They're going to huddle up again. It's got people nervous, Stuart. What are they up to? What do they want to do?
They want to own college sports, right? I mean, and they're pretty close to it at this point. You know, I think number one on the table is going to be the playoff format. And there was some talk in the offseason of, you know, them possibly, and by the way, when I say them, this is more Big Ten driven than SEC driven. Expanding to 14, expanding to 16, reserving 3-4 automatic berths for their own conferences, getting rid of the committee and just going by conference standings and at least in their leagues. And they have that ability if they want to in this next contract that starts in 26, you know, to make any changes for this coming season, which is the last one of the current deal. The conferences have to agree unanimously. In the next one, they don't. The Big Ten and SEC could say, guys, this is what we're doing. Come along or don't. And really, who has any leverage over them? So it's going to be interesting to watch over the next 12 months. Obviously, they're trying to leverage their, you know, or trying to take advantage of the considerable leverage they have right now. But are they really going to go so far as to, I think, ruin the credibility of their product? If they do stuff like that to the college football playoff, people already think it's rigged for the SEC, right, because of ESPN. If you're actually going to put special rules into it for your own conference, I think it might make sense for your own conference. It's the worst thing you could do for the overall credibility of the product.
I love that, and I agree with that. I think, you know, that's one of the beautiful things about the NCAA tournament. We had Stu Jackson, the WCC commissioner, on in hour one. He's concerned about the Power Four trying to meddle with championship events. Is that the same? Is that the same thing that's going on with the playoff in your mind, or something different?
The playoff, they've kind of already written their power into it with the new deal. The NCAA thing is just so weird to me, because everybody in college sports agrees the one thing the NCAA does well is run championships, especially March Madness. It's as close to a perfect event as you'll find. Now, I know Greg Sankey, for one, has complained openly, publicly. He hates when we portray him as the bad guy, but he honestly, I think, does believe that some of those 9th, 10th, 11th place teams in his conference are more deserving of the NCAA tournament than the first place team in some of those smaller conferences. So I'm a little nervous to see that that's being thrown about. But a lot of times this stuff gets thrown out there and then you never hear about it again.
Yeah, and Sankey's come on this show and essentially said that. He pointed out, you know, he said, hey, look, you know, Mississippi was the last team in the baseball tournament and they won the national championship. Who's to say that the next team in the SEC or the Big Ten wouldn't have been in the College World Series final too? And I think that's a slippery slope to live on, and it kind of diminishes the point of the regular season. And you know, it fuels that fire as well. Stuart Mandel is with us of The Athletic. Okay, so the college football offseason, give us an idea from your standpoint, Stu. Like, you do a great job covering the sport. You're all over it for The Athletic. You've already put out your early 2025 top 25, putting some faith in Penn State. Your offseason, how has it changed with college football and the portal and everything becoming more year-round?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like there's no offseason. It feels like there's always news of some sort. I mean, for me, the off season has always been a great time to explore some of these topics deeper than I can during the season. Some of the off-the-field stuff gets a lot more attention. I think the biggest thing happening in college sports this offseason is in April in Oakland is the hearing for the House settlement approval, which everybody in college sports has assumed is a formality. But one by one, all these people are rising up in opposition to it, including the Department of Justice. If that thing doesn't get approved, I don't know what they're going to do. They've staked their whole future to it. So I think there'll be a lot of intrigue around that. And the tough thing about stuff like the House settlement or any other, you know, kind of wonky issues in college sports, there's really no time to address that in any depth in October. But fortunately, we have this time of year when I can go do a little bit more reporting on that stuff.
All right. So Ryan Day and Ohio State walk-off champions. In all, you feel like the CFP won? I mean, despite the ratings that you look back, do you say it's a success?
I do. It accomplished what they said it would accomplish, or what they hoped it would accomplish. It made the whole country, not just the SEC, not just the Big Ten, the whole country involved in the main event. And I think it's awesome that everybody from Arizona State to Indiana to Boise to SMU got to be part of the big event. Yes, it ended with two traditional brands. That's going to happen no matter what format you put it in. Like, those teams have the players. We got to see Cam Scataboo emerge as a national sensation. We saw some less obvious teams involved. And also, I thought that bowl season, the Pop-Tarts Bowl, and that time of year was also very enjoyable, too.
Yeah, you kind of pointed that out. Everybody was waving at the bowl season, but the ratings for those games, I think you wrote this, the ratings were decent for the bowl games.
Yeah, it shocked me. I was one of the many who assumed once you get a bigger playoff, there go the other bowls. And with the opposite, ESPN saw a big uptick, I think a 15% uptick, in viewership for those bowls that fell between the first round of the playoff and the quarterfinals, like the last 10 days or so of or 8 days or so of December. And now that it happened, it's like, oh yeah, that makes sense. There was actual high stakes college football on December 21st. It stands to reason people kept the TV on, kept watching college football, because college football is fun. So that was a nice little unexpected product of it. We'll see if it continues, but at least in the first year, I think the fact that the sport didn't, like, disappear for 3 weeks, that it led straight from the regular season to the first round of the playoff, kept everybody engaged in the rest of the sport as well.
My last question, NFL draft related. You've got Shedeur Sanders. You've got a guy like Cam Ward. You have a Travis Hunter. NFL GMs come to you, Stuart, and say, which of these guys is going to have the best pro career? Which one of those three guys do you think plays the longest and makes the biggest impact?
Travis Hunter's got to be the surest one. You know, it's always so hard to predict with quarterbacks. Either of those guys could end up being great, great NFL quarterbacks or busts. But generally speaking, when a guy is as talented as Travis Hunter is at two different positions, he's gonna make somebody's roster, and he's gonna be a very high level player for many, many years. And I realize the teams that are at the top of the draft that need a quarterback, it's hard to pass on a quarterback. But this year, I mean, I just think he's so unique and so special. I don't know how you pass on him.
Stuart Mandel of The Athletic, I wish you a great weekend. Appreciate you giving us some of your time, Stu.
All right. Thanks, John.
All right. Take care. There was bumped into him on the morning of the championship game. He was hard at work with his laptop. I knew he was poring over something important. I said, what are you doing? He says, my top 25 for 2025. I was like, already? I haven't even finished the season. Well, there are three games left in football. AFC, NFC Championship, and a Super Bowl. We're going to talk about it coming up.